Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us. Today's show with the mayor is being pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take your questions live. But remember, you can always email questions for any of the show's four mayors at any time to the email address ask@wbaa.org. And Mayor, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Emily. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So when I saw you yesterday at the biweekly COVID-19 press briefing, you and West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis were wearing matching March Madness masks. I'm trying to say that five times fast. So March is, it's next month now. And one of the big questions has been whether a larger number of fans will be allowed at games. I know this came up yesterday at the briefing, so I want to make sure this is a no at this point. We think we're not going to see more fans than expected at this point at these games.
Yeah, I mean, that is my understanding at this point. I mean, I suppose it is possible that could change between now and then, but right as of right now, and as you saw yesterday, as you indicated, you know, Dr. Adler, as the best of his knowledge right now, too, was that it would just be family of the players and those types of things, and that would be it. But I don't think that the possibility of that changing, I think, probably is out there. That door is probably not all the way closed, but I don't have any inside information on that.
Okay. So what are you hoping for here, if there is the chance this could change? And that the NCAA will make an announcement and say, yes, we're having more people come in. What are you hoping will happen?
Well, I mean, if the numbers indicate that is a possibility, and with the NCAA and the local health department and medical experts, that they feel like they could do that safely, as a small number that could be appropriately socially distanced, then I would support that. If the science supports being able to do something like that, then I would support that. Certainly, things that help the local economy that can be done safely certainly are a good thing. So we would just have to see how the numbers continue, and if people think it might be possible to do something at a very small scale, we'll just have to wait and see. But I certainly would not oppose that if the experts feel that it can be done safely, and certainly if it cannot, would support not doing it.
Yeah, I know you've talked before about, you know, not having the typical crowds at, you know, home Purdue games in recent months can impact businesses like hotels. You know, there's an obvious economic, you know, upside to having people come into the area to spend money. But I guess, you know, would you have any concerns if a larger group of people came into the area, you know, the chance that could disrupt some of the good progress we've made in the county with COVID-19?
Well, again, if the medical experts felt like this was a situation that could be done safely, I would support that. I mean, we cannot, as the governor has said several times, we cannot forget that we do have an economy, and that the stress and mental illness stress on people that have lost their jobs, lost income, those things are devastating also. And so we have to work to continue to find that balance, to continue these good numbers, but also do what we can and think about those folks that, you know, in those hotels that work in those restaurants, clean the rooms, do the laundry, and those types of, you know, jobs that have lost their jobs, lost their hours, maybe lost their insurance, that we cannot lose sight that is a very important aspect. And so me personally, I look for that balance, and I think that balance is important. So I would not shy away if we felt we could do it safely to, you know, if there was adjustments like that, then I think that would be a good thing if we can do it safely.
So cases in our county have been trending downwards pretty significantly recently, though we know COVID variants are in the community, and that could sort of put those cases back up since those variants are more transmissible. But Tippecanoe County Health Officer Dr. Jeremy Adler said if the county remains yellow again on the state's COVID-19 metrics map next week, one of the guidelines that will be altered is that restrictions on curfew will be lifted. And we've talked about this 1 a.m. curfew before and how that impacts people with different work schedules. Mm-hmm. So we can think about, again, what are the upsides of, first of all, of allowing establishments to stay open a little bit later?
Yeah, I mean, certainly being able to reestablish some of the bar top seating, kind of address that first, again, helps with, capacity and the number of people that you can turn over in a given time. People still have to wear masks. They still have to be socially distanced. It's the requirements of, the 6 feet and stuff would not go away. And so I think those are positives to help, even if it's just a slight bit, with that, to get some numbers and some income. Maybe a few people could get called back to work. And then with the later hours, again, primarily in my mind for working people that get off and stop on the way home, that gives those establishments a little bit longer for those people that eat, and actually go in there to eat also when they get off at 11 or 11:30, some of them even midnight. And if that's enough to call a few people back and still do it safely, I'm fine with it. And I know Dr. Adler does not take those decisions lightly. In fact, we have been more restrictive than the vast majority of counties in the state of Indiana. We have additional restrictions that, quite frankly, wouldn't be taking place in orange or yellow. So some of the things that we're doing, so everybody takes it seriously here. But again, if the numbers get to that level, I think it's fine. And again, we need to continue to work to find that balance between all of us being safe and supporting our local businesses.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg, and right now we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rosworsky. So this was discussed yesterday, and Dr. Adler talked about this as well, but I wanted to get your take. As a mayor and as a local official, the statewide discussion right now is how much control the governor will have going forward if we find ourselves in this situation again. When does the legislature get to weigh in, and how much control and say will local health departments have? And I know that you and other local leaders have met and discussed decisions that impact residents in this area throughout the pandemic. So how would that process be impacted if some decisions were ultimately made by local government officials instead of, really just by the health department?
Yeah, I mean, I think, this has been a very unique, situation for all of us and kind of uncharted territory, so to speak, on the best way to handle these. And, the very unique situations that come up between health and the economy and business operations and those types of things that are all difficult and challenging, and of course sometimes there is also even the, like in our situation, other situations, since it's a county-wide situation and all parts of the county or two cities are not always identical in what's taking place, it can be a very challenging situation. Now certainly here, local units of government work very well together. We've worked well with the health department and the schools and those types of things to try to make those decisions. But the reality is, I want to be honest with your listeners. I do feel that local government needs a larger say in the situation than some of those decisions that are made. We certainly want science and the data to drive the day and to drive those decisions. But at the end of the day, local government officials are the ones that have been elected by the people to govern and lead the communities. And at the end of the day, whether it's something along the lines of COVID or whether it's police and fire services, whether it's infrastructure, the economy, at the end of the day, they hold us accountable and they hold us responsible for what's happening in the community. So I would like to see mayors, commissioners, local government, having a larger say, having a formal vote, not being regulated to simply an advisory status, because really that is all we are at this particular point. And I do think we need more authority than that. So, you know, I want that to be done in a balanced way. In no way don't want science and data not to drive what we do, but there are a lot of different points of view, and there are a lot of different things that are impacted and people's lives that are impacted by those decisions. So I hope that continues to be balanced. I also hope the legislature, you know, doesn't take too much power away from the governor. Again, there has to be some flexibility there to act and to be able to react. And so, you know, I think we need to make sure that we look at that comprehensively and make sure that we find that proper balance moving forward.
What would you say in the process of, you know, you're talking about kind of the unprecedented nature of the pandemic and of the past year, you know, what would an ideal situation look like? You know, what have you learned from this year that you would say these are lessons we should apply if this goes through, how to have this conversation, how to make a decision so that we're preserving safety, but you feel like you still have some control over what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we had somewhere along the lines where we had a formal way of us actually having a vote, I mean, I think it's going to open up our eyes on a lot of, you know, different things too, because typically the health department, you know, does certain things throughout the year. Having something like COVID is so unique. I mean, I think they actually meet four times a year, maybe at 7 a.m. in the morning. It's not a board and a group that typically gets a lot of exposure or you see involved in a lot of things directly in the community behind the scenes, obviously with restaurant inspections and things like that. But I think it's probably highlighted, the need to, ensure that somehow there's ongoing communication with local government and with the community. My guess is there's probably not a handful of community members that's ever even been to a health department board meeting or even knew when they met or how often they met. So it's probably a situation where we need to, you know, probably upgrade that a little bit too and make sure how do we get the community really involved and you know, hopefully this won't happen again, but you and I know it probably will at some level. It'll be something different, but, you know, the nature of things, this is probably not the end going forward of having to deal with maybe things on a larger scale, and we just need to see how we structure that so, you know, it really is, it's very transparent and also very engaging in the community with a lot of different groups.
So the city of Lafayette announced 17 small local businesses impacted by the pandemic had been selected to receive funding up to $10,000 to help with expenses such as rent, utilities, and payroll. And it looks like more businesses should expect funding in the coming months. Looking at that list of businesses who received funding, it's a varied list. There's a dental practice, there's a dance studio, restaurant groups. You know, how have these, you know, very different types of businesses been, you know, impacted differently financially over the past year?
Yeah, you know, we actually have a very complex process of doing that. We have a scoring system that we use, and of course you have to be in a low to moderate census tract area mm-hmm. to even apply with to beginning. And so, you know, as you know, the very first round we did, we put out about $400,000 worth of grants, and this round we're going to put out slightly more than $400,000 worth of grants. We're hoping to be able to help about 47 businesses this time around. And so, you know, when you look at their balance sheets, because we do ask for profit and loss information and different things like that, you know, it's just been with the challenge of the social distancing, the requirements, the percentages, they just all of them just cannot get their customer base into those areas to make the numbers work. And a lot of them, whether it's restaurants, a dance studio, a dentist office, you can't do somebody's dental work virtually, right? And
right.
dance. And so a lot of them that you will see are the ones that really the virtual options of what they do almost impossible or very challenging, right? You can do curbside pickup, but you can't virtually feed somebody at a restaurant. So, you know, that's the kind of common thread there of a lot of those, that the activities that they do, you know, just don't facilitate, you know, the virtual being able to fulfill that gap. And then others, you know, some of them are in areas where people who don't have as much disposable income may not be participating in the products that they sell or some of those activities. That may be some of the things that, you know, if people have lost their jobs or lost hours, have had to cut back, you know, then those are some of the areas where maybe they would be cutting back, and they just don't have the base to support them. And so we've worked very hard at the city. I feel, you know, for a city our size to have two rounds of funding, and then we sponsored Fresh Air Eats. So, you know, locally here, we've done over $1 million to help our locally owned small businesses. And then Adam Murphy from my staff worked with Michael Budd and the United Way to put together the COVID stability, housing instability hotline.
Mm-hmm.
that got funds to many, many, many people and or referred them to the appropriate agencies to get services that they need, funding that they needed. We've worked hard in our utility billing office with people and payment plans and all kinds of different things. So I feel blessed to be from this community, whether it's Lafayette Transitional Housing, whether it's LUM, Valley Oaks, just all kinds of different people in the social services that have stepped up, been creative, and even at the Lafayette Housing Authority, who helped us with the micro loans, looked at different projects and programs that could help people with rent. So, you know, it's been really rough on people. We know that in certain small businesses, but I really do feel like the community has really, you know, rose to the occasion trying to find creative ways to help people and to reach out to people and to help people get through this the best we can. And as I said, you know, yesterday, you were there, obviously, it feels to me like people are more hopeful, and people are, from a kind of a mental health issue, feeling a little bit better. I actually see more compliance with the mask and different things like that, because I think people like have said, well, there is true hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel, and if we can gut this out for a while longer, we really, really can get through it, as opposed, it seemed like we almost got in a place there for a while. It's like, well, it's never going to go away no matter what we do. It's just, and people really had the fatigue and were taking the mask off and just doing things. And I feel like there's a renewed sense of hope here, and that's actually got people a little bit more motivated to keep doing the right thing, because there is, you know, truly some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I actually, you know, when you said that, you know, I think that is worth noting, that having the vaccinations, whenever it is that people are going to be eligible for that, I think gives people something to look forward to say there is an end game here, as long as I can make it. So yeah, I think that's a valid point to make.
Yep.
So the city also announced an investment of $4.6 million in water and sewer utilities to about 4,500 acres northeast of Lafayette for economic growth along the Hoosier Heartland Highway Corridor in a lightly populated area. You said in a statement that providing adequate water and sewer service to the area is a top priority for the city of Lafayette. So can you talk about why that area is a priority for economic growth?
Well, you know, the Hoosier Heartland Corridor, and I served on that advisory committee for years as we worked to get that built, one, for safety reasons. Obviously, the old 25 was a very dangerous road where there was lots of accidents and lots of fatalities. So certainly from a safety, but also from that economic piece of, you know, you can get all the way from Fort Wayne to Lafayette, and then, of course, it ties in here at I-65, and so, you know, the Hoosier Heartland Industrial Corridor, as it was called, you know, the priority has always been over time to have the opportunity to develop that and to make it attractive to businesses and industry that need access to a four-lane road like that, and then access right into I-65, and to help Lafayette, Carroll County, that whole area, you know, through here, had the potential to continue to grow and create jobs. But obviously, to do that, you know, you need infrastructure. And we've, you know, focused very hard, quite frankly, running infrastructure to the south and to the east, and it had not made that step towards the corridor. Now, most people probably do not know that even before the corridor was finished, the city of Lafayette bought about 13 acres up at the old Aretz Airport site. For those folks who've been around a while, they'll know where that's at, right up there along the corridor, that can support a well field, a water well field there, that can probably pump about 6 million gallons a day, that could pump water then up the Hoosier Heartland corridor. It could also pump water back into the city of Lafayette to help create what we call additional looping systems, which helps with our water pressure. It also gives us the capacity that if there is a problem where we have to shut off a main, instead of people going without water for a while, we can actually reroute and loop water back into areas to try to service them. So that would serve two purposes for us over time. So you know, we've done a lot of work in other areas. We've not moved in that direction, but we felt it was time to take that first step of getting you know, that's outside the city limits actually, but to getting those lines closer to where we can potentially do that well field and potentially move up the Heartland. And so, you know, that's for growth in the future and down the road. But that's, I think, you know, as elected officials, that's what we're called on to do, too, is make sure that we're doing the right things, not only for now, but 5, 10, 15, and 20 years from now. And the people that come after us are in good position. It's like the other announcement you might have seen where we increased the capacity down at the wastewater treatment plant by about 27.
That was my next question.
Yes.
I saw that. And I guess, how does that process work? And also, how does that help the city from a financial standpoint to be able to increase that capacity?
Well, the way it works is, you know, we have certain requirements through IDEM and EPA on what we can treat during wet weather and dry weather, and capacities that we have, because we have to treat that, everything that we get, the water that we get back, the other discharges that we get back that people send, and factories and businesses and everything else. You know, we have to clean that over time to what's basically a swimmable standard before we put it back into the river. So if you don't have enough capacity during different events, then basically what you would have to do, any business that wanted to expand, any new homes that wanted to get built, any new factories that wanted to come here that had significant discharge, we'd have to tell them no, that we can't handle your capacity, or, you know, if you wait a couple years, maybe we'll be able to do it. Well, you know, if you say that, you're off the list, right? They go to some other community because you're competing in a global economy. And so, you know, we had capacity left at our plant where we weren't having to tell people no, but we also know that this is a significant growth area for the state and for the Midwest, and we want to make sure that we're always prepared and that, again, well into the future. And so we were able to do the work and really increase that capacity. You know, to be able to increase capacity by almost 30% is huge. The plant is in good shape literally for decades to come now, and certainly whatever type of user would happen to come, we're going to be able to say Lafayette, Indiana is open for business. We have the capacity and we have the resources to meet the needs of your factory, your company, whatever that might be, and we can say yes. So it keeps us in the running for those jobs and those investments. And, you know, it's not glamorous. Most people don't think about it, don't fully understand it, but I can tell you when I meet with companies of any size or manufacturing processes, one of the first things they ask about is what capacity you have for water and wastewater. I mean, that's one of the first things you hear. So it's really, it's a lot more important than maybe folks might realize.
Well, that is our time for today. Harry Wisworski, thanks so much for being with us as always.
Oh, thank you, Emily. Appreciate it.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.